Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to This Week in Health Innovation on the Blog Talk Radio Network and Affiliates. Hello, everyone. I'm Greg Masters, the creator, producer, and co-host of the show. And joining me in the virtual booth is my colleague and co-host extraordinaire, Dr. Phil Marshall, the Chief Product Officer of the innovative digital health checkup company Conversa Health. Hi, Phil.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Well, I'm glad you could join us today. This Week in Health Innovation is brought to you by Health Innovation Media, where we monitor the emerging health innovation economy from idea to business model. And I'm really excited to hear from our guests today, especially with the recent announcement by the president to prioritize the emerging field of precision medicine in the American psyche. But first, a little background on our special guest. Dietrich Steven, Ph.D., is the chairman of the Department of Human Genetics at the University of Pittsburgh and Associate Director of the Institute for Personalized Medicine at Pitt UPMC, where he leads the efforts in population genetics and translational acceleration. Prior to joining his current position, Dr. Steven founded and served as President and CEO of Silicon Valley Biosystems, which offers genome-based diagnostics at the point of care. Prior to SV Bio, he led the Gene Partnership Project at Children's Hospital Boston, Harvard Medical School, founded several companies in the San Francisco Bay Area, and served on the leadership team at the Translational Genomics Research Institute. He has been awarded the Bio-IT World Grand Prize, the Most Influential in Bringing Genomics to the Clinic Award, and the Legacy Laureate Award from the University of Pittsburgh. In addition to contributing to the media, Dr. Steven has been featured twice on page A1 of the Wall Street Journal for his contributions to medicine. So there you have it with that brief intro, Phil. Over to you.
Oh, it's great to be talking with our guest today. Dr. Steffen, good morning.
Good morning. How are you? Thank you for having me.
So it's great to have you on this momentous week in precision. Precision medicine arena have been championing this cause for a while and giving us some forecasts of great things ahead for us in the area of precision medicine, and now have really started to take root with the president's recent. To do is to get your perspective first on the importance of the president's recent announcement, including the $215 million investment in the proposed 2016 budget that would go towards precision medicine, and really give this audience a feel for what that phrase precision medicine even means. I dare say that most patients, even most physicians, don't really understand the implications of precision medicine for the future of our health and healthcare. Give us a sense for that.
Well, sure. Well, first of all, again, thank you for having me. It's a really important time in medicine. It's really an inflection point in medicine, and it was articulated and brought to the forefront by the president in his recent speech. And, you know, it's important to maybe take a step back and talk about what precision medicine is so we can really understand its current and potential impact on all of our lives. The fundamental concept is that all of us are different. I think we know that intuitively. All of our diseases are also different. Let me give you an example. So Lung cancer is named lung cancer because it's cancer in the top half of your body. Bone cancer is bone cancer because it's in your bones. But if you actually look at that, let's say lung adenocarcinoma, you can subclassify that disease into at least a dozen different types of tumors at the molecular level, and those individual subclasses of tumors respond differently to medications. So that immediately raises the question, why are we treating lung adenocarcinoma, which was named that because of its physical location in the body, with a one-size-fits-all strategy, rather than trying to understand the different subclasses of that disease and treat each one with a different therapeutic strategy. So that's just one example of the concept of precision medicine. It crosses across disease types. Autism spectrum disorder is another great example of a description that's used that encompasses likely dozens of different molecular diseases. And in order for us to really begin to be effective at treating these diseases and really moving the needle on patient outcomes, we need to think about each one as each subclass is a different disease. So hopefully that helps to articulate the concept of precision medicine. Not every disease is the same, and thus we should figure out who should get the blue pill versus the red pill versus the green pill for their class of disease. The other core concept here is that in addition to improving outcomes through individualized therapies, is that we can actually reduce the costs of care by improving efficiency in delivery. So one example of that is, why would we give very expensive therapies to individuals with subclasses of disease that won't respond to those therapies? That's wasteful at best in terms of economics. So how can we really improve the efficiencies of care through giving the right person the right drug at the right time?
Well, that is a great starting point for our discussion today. Oftentimes, I think when people think of precision medicine, they think about differing a treatment by one's own genetics. Here you've mentioned differing treatments by differences within the disease pattern itself. I want to turn in the direction of some of the research that is proposed to be funded under the $215 million effort the president announced. Give us a sense for what kind of research, what kind of cohort studies, what kind of data collection and analysis are necessary in order to really get our arms around how treatments can differ by patient and by disease.
Well, it's important to recognize that precision medicine didn't magically appear because the president announced it over the past week in his speech. There have been a group of individuals that have been doing the research that has been necessary to subclassify diseases and drive towards diagnostic tests that can be used at the point of care that will tell a patient and a physician what subclass that patient falls into, as well as developing targeted therapies for those subclasses. And so this group of individuals has actually been working in this direction for 2 decades and gathering momentum and being supported by groups that do wonderful policy work like the Personalized Medicine Coalition for a long time. And so there's been a groundswell of activity that's been building momentum for quite a while. And it's finally seeing the light of day from the perspective of, the population at large. So patients are hearing about it. They're hearing about it from the president. They're hearing about it online when they go do their research around what they should ask their doctor or what therapy they should be on, and pushing their doctors in this direction. Physicians are finally getting the clinical tools and strategies they need to practice precision medicine, so they're available in the marketplace because of just a wonderful startup community that's blossomed in San Francisco and Boston around these types of tools and strategies. So with that as kind of a preface, there is a large historical set of data that's been generated and has resulted in diagnostics and drugs in the marketplace so that we can practice precision medicine. And I'd be happy to give you some specific examples. That being said, we need to do a lot more. And there are wonderful examples in the private and public sectors of precisely the scale at which we need to do this. So, for example, the president announced that we need to go off and sequence the genomes of a million individuals, a million well-characterized individuals, to try and get more visibility into subclasses of disease and how patients will respond differently to different therapeutics. That's a public sector effort. In the private sector, we have iconic scientists like Craig Venter, who sequenced the first human genome, doing exactly the same thing. So his new company, Health Longevity in San Diego, is also sequencing a million human genomes over the next decade and trying to understand how the genome and the environment come together to cause disease, and then once an individual has a disease, how do you treat them uniquely? So data is critically important, and we need to continue to build on that data set exponentially if we want to continue to move the needle forward on clinical interventions.
Well, I appreciate that clarification that we've had a lot of work that's already been done. There are both public and private efforts that continue, and that well-characterized individuals with their genome sequence will help further this effort. And in the end, we are expecting a health system, I guess, to really first understand the individual's own genetic makeup and the particular characteristics of his or her illness in order to target these therapies. And so what I'd like to do is I'd like to dig into how exactly that happens and what are the implications for the startup and entrepreneurial and even corporate communities with this transition to a precision medicine environment. Let's start first with the implications for the biopharma market. A little background on Stefan is that he is not only one of the world's regarded experts in precision medicine and a department chair there at University of Pittsburgh, but also the founder of Navigenics and SB Bio, so has an entrepreneurial bent. And so from that perspective, how does the biopharma industry transition away from the notion of blockbuster drugs that have to be safe and effective for the vast majority of people to targeted therapeutics that perhaps when paired with the diagnostic genomic test or otherwise could be very safe and extremely effective for just the right targeted individuals? How does that industry start to transition?
It's such a great question, and it's difficult to put a pin in the business of healthcare because it's so complex, and there are so many different stakeholders in the ecosystem that it's sort of like moving an aircraft carrier when you talk about changing healthcare. That being said, I think the starting point for this massive disruption that we've witnessed over the last few years in healthcare was actually the sequencing of the human genome. And that was delivered to us in the early 2000s in draft form. And the federal government spent more than $3 billion to sequence the first human genome and develop the tools and technologies to sift through that genetic code in individuals to try and better understand the root causes of disease. So that was a real watershed moment in a technological revolution that has powered the private sector to develop new ways to diagnose disease at the molecular level. So shortly after that, we started Navigenics to basically deliver a human genome to a patient and physician so that those individuals could understand an individual's risk for certain diseases and that they could better manage their health portfolio moving forward. For example, avoid specific exposures that they might be most susceptible to, sign up for early screening if they were susceptible or at higher risk for certain diseases like breast cancer or colon cancer. Earlier screening generally equals better outcomes. Earlier diagnosis of those diseases. So the earlier diagnose, the better you can manage a patient. And then once they have disease, what drug should they be on? So the human genome enabled a wave of molecular diagnostics companies to emerge in the marketplace that start to be able to slice and dice disease in different ways so that patients can be managed differently. Now, those companies took a while to catch on because they had to integrate into the business of healthcare delivery, and physicians and payers were saying, well, geez, it's great to know that, you know, this person is in this specific class of disease, but there's nothing I can do differently. So we actually had to wait for big pharma to come in and start to fuel development around targeted therapies and subclass-specific therapies, which they have. And I think the reason they've done that is because they've recognized that even with blockbuster drugs, there are certain people that don't respond to those blockbusters or will have adverse events against those blockbusters. So their rationale in moving in this direction was actually to capture more market share with different classes of drugs to increase revenue. And we've seen that. So we now see significant portion of pharma's pipeline filled with targeted therapies that hit subclasses of diseases. So first we had the technology, then we had a wave of diagnostics companies, and now we have a wave of therapies following. And now that we have these tools, physicians and payers are starting to say, well, you know, if I give this diagnostic and this targeted therapy, I'll have better outcomes, so it's better for physicians, and payers are starting to reimburse for that. So that's the kind of trend that I've seen over the last decade.
That's a great overview of how things have begun to transition. And so what you're saying then is that biopharma is changing not only the kind of therapeutic that it's bringing to the market, but it has to be changing its process as well, because generally when you get a free and clear FDA approval for a compound, it has to be so darn safe and effective for such a broad swath of folks that it really arguably dilutes its impact. In other words, other compounds could have a greater impact if only you could first target them to just the right individual. So that must mean that the process of bringing a drug to market is changing. Have you seen that pairing the diagnostic in the full phases of clinical trials is now becoming commonplace?
Absolutely. There are actually incentives from FDA that if you predict that your drug will work better in a subclass and you structure your trial to that effect, you can get approval faster if it's successful. So there are incentives in place in the market to drive targeted therapies forward, which I think is wonderful and enlightened. And we're seeing the fruits of that today in the marketplace. You hear about a new targeted cancer drug in the popular media almost monthly, and there's a reason. I think it naturally follows the biology of the disease, so these drugs actually work, and there are incentives around bringing them into the marketplace.
Well, that's good to hear. Let's talk a little bit now about where the rubber hits the road, and that is in delivering health care. You happen to be nestled there in Pittsburgh in one of the nation's largest delivery systems and one that's known for great innovation, UPMC. And so your experience in working with that delivery system, how seeing this transition towards precision medicine beginning to taking hold? What are those initial signs? What are some good initial examples for how precision medicine is being inserted into the delivery of real healthcare?
Well, we're lucky here in Pittsburgh that we have a wonderful academic medical center that's fully integrated. So it's both a provider of outstanding clinical care, but it's also a payer, so it's integrated, and a lot of thought has gone into how we bring forward new clinical tools and strategies that truly improve patient outcomes and hopefully also reduce the costs of care so we can be more efficient in delivering better care across the board. So my role in all of that is within our Institute for Personalized Medicine, and specifically in translating new things that are emerging in the marketplace into things that we can turn on in our integrated delivery system. So let me give you a couple examples of some of the new tools and strategies that are available at our system. So for example, patients who are diagnosed with cancer can have a biopsy of their tumor performed. That tumor is then sequenced on next-generation sequencing machines to identify drug targets. So dozens of genes are sequenced, and then a very specific drug can be targeted to that patient's tumor so that they improve their likelihood for responding. Alongside that, and this is the common theme, they won't be given drugs that they won't respond to, and that's where the efficiencies come in. So that's one example. Another example is some of the wonderful work that's being done at our children's hospital, where a great geneticist, Jerry Vockley, is implementing whole exome sequencing. The exome is the portion of the genome that actually codes for proteins that do all the work. So it's a subset of the genome. We commonly think of it as the quote-unquote relevant portion of the genome. But if a child is indicated for a genetic test, rather than just do that one genetic test, he'll actually go off and sequence all 25,000 genes in that child under the logic that often it's unclear what gene a child should be tested for, and so there is often serial testing of genes. That we didn't find a mutation in gene 1. Let's go sequence gene 2. Let's go sequence gene 3. That add immensely to the cost of delivering genetic testing for these kids with complex genetic diseases. And so he's done the math, he'll simply go sequence every gene in the genome for slightly more money, get the answer, and be able to manage that patient quickly and efficiently downstream of that. So those are just a couple examples of how we're implementing modern precision medicine technologies in an integrated delivery system. And again, I want to reiterate that there's deep thought that's gone into making sure that these tests provide improved outcomes and reduce costs to the system overall.
Where do you think that the regular family physician in a community somewhere far away from UPMC and other great academic medical centers, where do you think they are first going to be delivering regular and routine precision medicine? What are the examples that doctor become familiar with most quickly?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think the answer is in oncology first, and then probably in generalized drug selection. What I'm, and I gave you an example of sort of precision medicine oncology earlier, where we can take a biopsy of the tumor and sequence a number of genes and try and select the right drug. There's another set of drug selection technologies out there that occur outside of oncology, in the psychiatric disease, in the geriatric population, the mentally ill, where community-based physicians across the country, even today, have access to genetic testing technologies that they can apply to, let's say, an elderly patient who's on routinely four or more medications that will tell them which of those medications might be causing adverse events in that individual and may result in falls or ER admissions or readmissions, and simply start to more intelligently define which drugs a person should be on. So I think those are at the bleeding edge of penetrating community-based clinical practices, so cancer and other medication selection technologies. I think it's important to note, though, at this point, that there is a slew of activity in this space from the private sector. There are new genetic testing companies popping up left and right every day, and it's simply overwhelming for community-based physicians to try and understand which one is rigorous, which one's not, how to use it. So in order to really fuel this next generation of medicine, there needs to be a substantive educational campaign around how to use, you know, quality and use of these new technologies, and alongside that, regulation to make sure that these technologies are appropriately marketed in the marketplace. And I should mention that I'm deeply impressed with FDA and their ability to understand this groundswell of precision medicine technologies and manage it. I've been deeply impressed with them and think they're doing a great job at this point.
Well, here on This Week in Innovation, we do like to talk about innovation and new companies. We've only got a couple of minutes left, but in the remaining time we have, what are some of the companies or individuals who are doing some of the most innovative and new work to push this whole idea of precision medicine forward? Who are the real trailblazers in this area?
Mm-hmm. So there are some great, on the diagnostic side, there are some great companies. For example, Guardant Health, which is based in Silicon Valley, which can take a blood sample from someone and tell them if they have cancer and what type of cancer, so that it's non-invasive and non-imaging based. We can do the same thing with moms who are pregnant in the first trimester, a simple blood test, and we can tell the mom if they've got a child who has a chromosomal abnormality, for example, you know, chromosome 18, which is a lethal trisomy, and they can manage that pregnancy accordingly without the risks of amniocentesis, for example, which is expensive and has a 1% rate of spontaneous abortion. So we've gotten rid of amniocentesis largely. There's a wonderful company called Parabase in Boston that is developing a test for children in the NICU. These are severely ill kids, many of which have a genetic disease, and so they can do a quick 24-hour test to tell the clinician whether that child has a genetic disease, and if so, which one, and how to manage them better and more effectively. On the therapeutic side, again, big pharma's pipelines are stacked with targeted therapies. There's a slew of wonderful cancer immunotherapy companies coming forward. These are companies that can actually harness the body's own immune system to target a cancer cell, so activate the immune system to target and kill your own cancer in a way that doesn't use harmful chemicals that kill all cells or damage all cells. Autoimmune diseases like type 1 diabetes It's a company called Diavax in San Diego that looks like it has a promising way of halting the immune response against self or reinducing tolerance so that these kids don't attack their own pancreases and develop diabetes. So the list goes on, and certainly in the health information technology space where you're the expert, there's tremendous innovation. So it's an exciting time in medicine. I think we're at a true inflection point, and we should all be excited about the next decades to come.
Well, Dr. Dietrich Steffen, we really appreciate you joining us on the call, helping us look ahead and get around this very exciting frontier that we are embarking upon. It would take all of us to really crowdsource the knowledge and information necessary to create this new world of targeted, more efficient, and effective therapies. Dr. Steffen, thank you so much for joining us today.
My honor. Thank you for having me.
And that'll have to be the last word for today's broadcast. You've been listening to This Week in Health Innovation, and we've been speaking with Dietrich Steffen, Ph.D., the chairman of the Department of Human Genetics at the University of Pittsburgh and associate director of the Institute for Personalized Medicine of Pitt UPMC. We do this weekly, at least mostly. Join us next week for another edition of This Week in Health Innovation. For Dr. Phil Marshall, this is Greg Masters saying bye now.